ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्री चैतन्य चरितामृत मध्य लीला चैप्टर 22 टेक्स्ट 14 एंड 15 Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Kama krodha dash hoya talatik hai bhramite bhramite jodi sadhu boidha pai tarupadesha mantre pishachi palai কৃষ্ণ ভক্তি পাই তবে কৃষ্ণ নিকট যাই। Translation: In this way, the conditioned soul becomes the servant of lusty desires, and when these are not fulfilled, he becomes the servant of anger and continues to be kicked by the external energy Maya. Wandering and wandering throughout the universe, he may by chance get the association of a devotee physician whose instructions and hymns make the witch of the external energy flee. The conditioned soul thus gets into touch with devotional service to Lord Krishna, and in this way he can approach nearer and nearer to the Lord. Do you know that word pishachi? I thought I heard him saying. You have that same word, huh? Purport. An explanation of verses 8 through 15 is given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amrita Pravaha Bhasha. The Lord is spread throughout the creation in his quadruple expansions and incarnations. Krishna is fully represented with all potencies and in each and every personal extension, but the living entities, although separated expansions, are also considered one of the Lord's energies. The living entities are divided into two categories, the eternally liberated and the eternally conditioned. Those who are ever liberated never come in contact with Maya, the external energy. The ever-conditioned souls are always under the clutches of the external energy. This is described by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Devihyesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. The nitya badhas are always conditioned by the external energy, and the nitya muktas never come in contact with the external energy. Sometimes an ever-liberated personal associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead descends into this universe just as the Lord descends. Although working for the liberation of conditioned souls, the messenger of the Supreme Lord remains untouched by the material energy. Generally, ever-liberated personalities live in the spiritual world as associates of Lord Krishna, and they are known as Krishna Parishad, associates of the Lord. Their only business is enjoying Lord Krishna's company. And even though such eternally liberated persons come within this material world to serve the Lord's purpose, they enjoy Lord Krishna's company without stoppage. The ever-liberated person who works on Krishna's behalf enjoys Lord Krishna's company through his engagement. The ever-conditioned soul, provoked by lusty desires to enjoy the material world, is forced to transmigrate from one body to another. Sometimes he is elevated to higher planetary systems, and sometimes he is degraded to hellish planets and subjected to the tribulations of the external energy. due to being conditioned by the external energy, the conditioned soul within this material world gets two kinds of bodies, a gross material body and a subtle material body composed of mind, intelligence and ego. Due to the gross and subtle bodies, he is subjected to the threefold miseries, adhyatmika, adhibhautika and adhidaivika. Miseries arising from the body and mind, other living entities and natural disturbances caused by demigods from higher planetary systems. The conditioned soul subjected to the threefold miseries is ceaselessly kicked by Maya, and this is his disease. If by chance he meets a saintly person who works on Krishna's behalf to deliver conditioned souls, and if he agrees to abide by his order, he can gradually approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Kama krodhe dasha haya ta latik hai bhramite bhramite jadi shadhu boidha pai taru pradesha mantre pishachi palai krishna bhakti pai tabe krishna nikat jai. In this way, the conditioned soul becomes the servant of lusty desires, and when these are not fulfilled, he becomes the servant of anger and continues to be kicked by the external energy Maya. Wandering and wandering throughout the universe, he may, by chance, get the association of a devotee physician, whose instructions and hymns, mantras, make the witch of the external energy flee. The conditioned soul thus gets into touch with devotional service to Lord Krishna, and in this way he can approach nearer and nearer to the Lord. So I've been reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Those who are familiar with this Chaitanya Charitamrita know that it's the most beautiful delineation of the sweetest and most munificent avatar of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, full of his beautiful pastimes, but also very importantly, full of his teachings. These two verses which I read, Bengali verses, they are from his teachings. And in these two verses, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu summarizes the whole existential situation of the material world and the purpose of life to get out of this material world, where we go to and how we go. So our existential position is that we're being kicked by the material energy, figuratively and sometimes actually also. We're suffering. The point is that we're suffering life after life due to our material desires, and that we can go to Krishna by performing the process of devotional service to Krishna. Then we can go to Krishna in the spiritual world. And what is the key factor in all this is to attain the association of a sadhu vaidya. Sadhu means a saintly person. It's a general term for a saintly person. And a vaidya means a doctor. So it's a figurative term here. That the doctor, he gives instructions and mantras. That's one, of course, that won't be accepted in the modern age, but one method of chikitsa, medical treatment, is by mantras. Especially some diseases are caused by evil spirits, which can be driven away by mantras, certain mantras. So this allegory is there, that we are diseased in this material world. It's a diseased condition to have material desires. Those material desires can be driven away by the sadhu, who can, by giving that, can also give us the process of devotional service by which we can go to Krishna. So in two verses, a huge amount of knowledge is summarized. The essence of all the knowledge of all the Vedas and Vedantas, and we also find here the proper meaning, or the best meaning of the word sadhu, which is actually what I plan to speak about now. What is the meaning of the word sadhu? It's a common word in India, at least in Indian languages, and in the Sanskrit language, in Bhagavad Gita, we have sadhureva samantavya. Such a person, Krishna says, bhajate mam ananya bhak, one who worships me, Krishna says, without being divided in his worship. Krishna says such a person should be considered a sadhu. So it's a common term that's there in all Indian languages. Sadhu, and the root term sat. Sat means, it's another common word in what we may call Indian spiritual terminology. Sat means that which is proper, right, correct, true, eternal, real. These are different meanings of the word sat. And of course this word comes in Bhagavad Gita, na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha. In the beginning of Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita, he teaches that it's almost axiomatic, but it's overlooked by everyone, that which is asat, that which is unreal, temporary, illusory, it will not last. It never really exists. And that which is sat, or that which is real, it doesn't diminish. So sadhu means someone who is fixed in that which is sat, that which is real, proper, eternal, correct, true, and so on. And in ordinary terminology in Indian culture, in Indian languages, the word sadhu means someone who lives a holy life, who has left the world, renounced the world, to pursue self-realization. Broader meaning, the broader meaning is one who is well-behaved and religious, so in that sense a sadhu doesn't have to mean someone who is a renunciant or a mendicant, but it can mean any person who's good or religious or interested in, or whose life is dedicated for spiritual purposes, even if they are married. So, but the general meaning of a sadhu is a renounced holy man, a sannyasi, and therefore we may say the word sadhu to refer to, if we see someone in orange colored cloth, dressed in cloth, not dressed in pants and shirt, especially if he has long flowing hair and a long beard, who's a Hindu or a Buddhist. Well, we may say the word for Jain also, we may say sadhu, but they don't wear saffron. In fact, the Jain sadhu, some of them, they don't wear anything, literally nothing whatsoever. But anyway, the general meaning is some holy man. And Muslims, generally, of course, there are so many, there may be Muslim holy men also, but they look somewhat different and they're called fakirs or peers or like that. So generally means someone who's in the Vedic culture, Hindu, or the offshoots from the Vedic culture, Jain, Buddhist, like that. And traditionally, such sadhus are quite respected. It depends. There's a large class of sadhus who are also perceived as being not much more than beggars. In fact, one time, that was during the time of Indira Gandhi, there was a census, national census of India. So they had categories of occupations, farmers, businessmen, and one of them was sadhus and beggars. Because it was considered, and actually sadhus they are, bhikshuk, the word is there, which means a beggar. But the idea is that if a sadhu comes to beg for you, that's for your good fortune. And of course, there are people who take advantage of that. And therefore, it used to be just like my youth, I remember Bora Bazaar, Calcutta, all the Marwari shops. And there sadhus would come around daily, and the shopkeepers would keep 5 paisa, many 5 paisa or 10 paisa coins, just for the sadhus, that's all. Just give it to them and then they'll go away and they won't bother you anymore. And if they go to enough shops, they'll get enough money to buy their biddies and ganja or whatever else they want. So such sadhus are not respected very highly, who are literally just living on people's sentiment. But still, many sadhus are respected, and if a sadhu can cut a profile at least, or somehow or other win the respect of others, then people will tend to respect them. I'm talking about India here. Naturally, there has been a lot of outcry about people who are respected as sadhus, saintly people. That's a simple way to say the term, saintly people. If it becomes found out that they're not actually so very saintly, especially it's not at all appreciated in India. If someone who's supposed to be a renunciant of the world is clandestinely having some sexual relationship, it's not appreciated. Because to renounce sexual desires is not at all easy. But sadhus are supposed to live separately from females, and if they don't, if they're taking money from the public and being respected by the public, but secretly they're having sexual affairs, it is very, very much disliked by the Indian public up to the present day. And there have been some high-profile sadhus over the years who have been exposed for not being so very saintly, and many people have lost their faith in sadhus altogether. They think that they're all bogus. But still, there are some who are widely respected. That respect, if someone is respected, that respect can be used or utilized to influence people in various ways. Just like, for instance, up until recently in India, for about 20 years, it was very common to see photographs of a gentleman called Sachin Tendulkar all over the place, because his face, his name and his face were very well known. So he was being, that he was hired by companies, advertising agencies, to promote so many different things. Who else? This Amitabh Bachchan, advertising practically anything. Because by association with such a well-known and popular person, it's presumed that if we advertise our product, Amitabh Bachchan uses, he recommends Parker pens, okay, then that will promote the sales of such goods. In recent times, such a technique is going on in relation to all kinds of household items and health, Ayurvedic medicines. It started off with Ayurvedic medicines with one well-known sadhu of North India, who's not actually directly involved in business, we're told, but he lent his good name, and he has a good name. He's a clean sadhu in that respect. He's not a lecher, debauchee, not at all. So he lent his name to Ayurvedic medicines, and eventually that became toothpaste, and then cosmetics, and then it's floor cleaners and all kinds of things. I'm just making the point that there's at least one well-known and well-respected sadhu in India whose name is intimately connected with all kinds of medicines, household goods, cosmetic items, and this and that. From what I'm told, they do produce quite good quality products at reasonable prices. So, all right, that's good. But the question arises that, increasingly may be seen that the identity of such a sadhu becomes more known for the business than for whatever he's teaching. This particular sadhu I'm talking about came to fame as a teacher of yoga. By yoga, I'm using the word yoga in the way that it's colloquially known at the present time, not the original meaning of the word. Various physical techniques, exercises, and other physical techniques for good physical health. There are other sadhus who are at the present time in India who are politicians, and although they're known as sadhus and dressed as sadhus, but they're known not for their spiritual teachings, but for their political activities and administrative activities. And it may be that the sadhus who I'm referring to are doing a good job overall as in promoting business, the business may be doing good service to the people of this country, and the sadhu may be doing a good, sincere job as a politician, although it's practically impossible as a politician to satisfy everyone, but what is a sadhu? That's the topic here. Sadhu means someone who has dedicated their life for spiritual understanding, and sadhu vaidya, who helps others to become free from birth and death, a renounced person. Now, it could be said that, well, it's a good thing that sadhus are getting into business and politics and who knows what else they could become. Maybe in a few years we'll see the Indian cricket team in saffron. There will be sadhu this, the first batsman, and so on. Although they probably have to not have long flowing robes. And theoretically we could have sadhus in all kinds of professions, and maybe they do a good job, but I suspect that most people would prefer that sadhus be sadhus. They should speak on Shastra, the revealed scriptures, and give instructions. If they're going to be involved in public life, we're not saying they shouldn't be involved in public life, and even politics and business. They can give advice to politicians and businessmen and anyone else. But if they themselves become so much involved in it that their role as a sadhu is overshadowed by their role in politics or business or cricket or whatever, then the distinctiveness of them as a sadhu becomes lost. And then sadhu means just anyone else. It's just that they have the name of a sadhu and the dress of a sadhu, but they're not really doing the work of a sadhu. So sadhus are supposed to speak on Shastra. And it's not just that they advise others, because there are many people who advise others, just like this analogy is given of a sadhu being like a doctor. So a doctor gives advice. But it's not that every doctor is a sadhu. Or a politician may give advice, but it doesn't mean that a politician is a sadhu. Or a parents may give advice, but then, or teachers give advice. But sadhus, at least according to the actual definition and understanding that's been coming down since time immemorial, a sadhu is one who gives advice on how to become free from this entanglement in this material world. And most specifically, a sadhu is a devotee of Krishna who gives information about Krishna. So even sadhus may give advice, and satsangas are there, very well known. People come together and they listen to a sadhu, and the sadhu gives talks, just like I am giving a talk now. Sadhus, they give talks and give in which they give advice to people in how to improve their lives. But if the sadhu gives advice on personality development or how to cure boils, how to get your children to be serious about studies, if their talks are a lot of jokes or telling entertaining stories, even if the entertaining stories are on subjects which are derived from scripture, that sadhu is not really doing what a sadhu is supposed to be, because a sadhu is very serious business. Again, the example of a doctor. If you go to a doctor, you have a disease and you're seriously suffering, and the doctor just tells a bunch of jokes and sends you away, Well, that's a useless doctor. He's got to give you treatment. He's got to actually treat you. He's got to get to the point. He might be a very popular doctor for telling jokes, but he's not a doctor. He's got to treat you. And the treatment means he's got to give you, he's got to know what he's talking about. He's got to give you specific treatment which the patient has to follow. It may not be to the patient's liking. They may say the patient, now on for the rest of your life, you can't eat sweets. You have to stop that altogether, and you may not like it, but you have to follow it if you want to get cured. It's a serious business. One goes to a doctor for, you expect the doctor to be very serious because he has a very serious role to play in human society. And he might be a good joker on the side. He might, apart from being a doctor, he might be good at telling jokes, but that's not what makes him a doctor. That's not his duty. His duty is to cure you by the prescribed method. So similarly, people may like to go to sadhus who are very expert at speaking in a way that people like, but if at the end of all of it, if you're not gaining guidance, clear understanding of how we're suffering in this material world and how we can be free from this suffering and how we can revive our original blissful Krishna consciousness and go to Krishna in the spiritual world, then what's the point? How is the sadhu a sadhu? It's not the dress. After all, anyone can dress like this. You can, in a drama, someone can dress up as a sadhu. And they may play the role of a sadhu, but then after the drama's over, then they go back to being just like anyone else. So a sadhu is a very distinctive role within human society. Of course, we say sadhus are renounced from the material world, but they may involve in it for the benefit of others. What they've received, what they've understood, what they've realized, they try to bring that to others. But that means to bring to others, to people who are in material consciousness, who are entangled in material life, it means to bring them something different, something higher, something better. There may be many jokers, many magicians who can perform tricks, and out of the sleeve they produce a watch or something like that. There was a famous sadhu, or actually they used to call him Bhagawan, God, who was well known for producing watches out of the, well, it's supposed to be out of his hand, but it was probably out of the sleeve of his tunic. It didn't say, you see on the watch, it would say Rolex or something like this. It was already a brand which was already there. It wasn't Sai Baba, oops. It wasn't something that he had produced originally. He never produced, for instance, motor cars. Here's a motor car, boom. But only things which, maybe that he was hiding them in his tunic. Maybe. He was a magician. Good magician. No doubt. But that's not the job of a sadhu, to do magic. Or to promote toothpaste. Or to be a politician. Or anything else, but to direct people toward the real goal of life, which is to understand who we are. We are eternal living beings, caught in the vicious cycle of birth and death. And how we can get out of this vicious cycle and revive our eternal, blissful life in the service of Krishna. So if sadhus don't do this, if they do or if they become known for doing other things, then the whole meaning of the word, or the whole role, or the whole understanding of it means to be a sadhu is different. Nowadays, it's thought that sadhus, they should organize hospitals, feed the poor, schools, especially for the poor, and so on. But actually, this is also a relatively modern idea. Christian missionaries in India started doing this, and then some other people, Hindus, who call themselves missionaries, they started doing the same thing. Of course, I think that mission, they had a court order which said they're not Hindus. But anyway, they're generally thought of as Hindus. So now it's thought that the duty of sadhus is to organize health care, things like eye hospitals and eye camps and so on. It's not, that's what sadhus should do. But that's not traditionally the duty of sadhus. It's not that it shouldn't be done, but that's done by wealthy grihasthas or whatever. They organize such things. But now the sadhus have taken it as their duty, and people expect them to do it. But the sadhus have more important things to do. There may be eye camps, there may be hospitals for curing the body. But the sadhus, they direct people to that knowledge, to that way of life, by which people can be elevated to the position beyond birth and death, so they don't have to get born again, so they don't have to enter a hospital ever again. That is the duty of a sadhu. Here's more serious things to do than to attend to the needs of the body. Now people may think, well, what could be more serious than that? If they think like that, that's because the sadhus are not doing their duty of teaching that the body is temporary. The body is only important in as much as we can utilize this body. Nridehama dhyang sulabang sudur labam. This very rarely attained human body for the sake of crossing over the ocean of material existence. Pavansukalvo guru karanadharam. This human body is compared to a good boat for crossing over the ocean of material existence. And guru karanadhara, the guru is the captain, able captain of the ship. So if the guru, he's the captain of the ship for sailing over the ocean, and instead he tells some stories and jokes, and that's all, then you may have a good boat for crossing, or he's just concerned with keeping the boat well repaired. The main thing is to keep the boat well repaired, and so everyone's very anxious to keep the boat well repaired. But the boat is meant for crossing over the material existence. Mayanukulena nabasvitaritam. And Krishna says, speaking this verse, the favorable wind is given by me. That is the instructions that I give in scripture. Pumandavabding nataretsa atnaha, Krishna says. If someone has all these facilities but fails to cross the ocean of material existence, simply committing suicide. So the sadhus, unless they teach people these things, the most serious thing, more important than keeping the boat intact, is utilizing the boat to cross the ocean. So if we simply give advice how to keep the body healthy, but we don't tell people that after all, you get body after body after body, now utilize this body to go beyond the ocean of birth and death, to go back home, back to Godhead, then that is not the duty of a sadhu. So nowadays people expect the sadhus to do mundane or bodily and social welfare work. It's unfortunate because sadhu, they have a more important duty, and the human form of life is meant for more than this. But now that sadhus are getting so much into teaching things like personality development and life coaching, all on the mundane platform, and opening hospitals and schools for teaching people not how to get free from birth and death, but how to get more and more entangled in birth and death. It may be that in future people will think that, well, sadhus, they're supposed to be in politics and business. Because these prominent sadhus, by their very lives, are redefining the role of a sadhu. But the real duty of sadhus is to be detached from all this. We don't say that, there is a role in human society for business and politics and medicine and bodily welfare work and so on. But the duty of a sadhu is himself to be absorbed in spiritual consciousness, Brahmanishta, to be absorbed in spiritual consciousness and to guide others spiritually. Now, there are sadhus in India up to the present time who are doing this, but they're not the superstar sadhus. They're not the ones who get millions of hits on Facebook. The ones who are patiently, faithfully, honestly teaching others what they need to hear. They don't hit the high popularity stakes. People are foolish. They like to get something which appeals to their senses. But then that's the duty of the sadhu to advise them how to go beyond that foolishness and to go beyond the platform of simply being entertained and come to the platform of real knowledge in Krishna consciousness. So I don't have a long beard. I have saffron cloth. I have the marks of a sadhu. So I can simply advise, as we're reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ekanta ashray karo Chaitanya Charane. Fully take shelter of the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Study and live according to the teachings of Bhagavad Gita as it is. And Harennama eva kevalam. Kalo nascheva 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 gatiranyata. Chant the holy names of Krishna. There is no other way, no other way, no other way for spiritual advancement, for reaching the ultimate goal of life. In this Kali Yuga, there is no other way. I personally cannot fathom my own good fortune in, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, having attained the shelter of a genuine sadhu, vaidya, by Sri Guru, Jagat Guru, the Guru of the whole universe, Srila Prabhupada, who very kindly taught us not to be entangled in this material world, to understand that everything here is temporary, and parastasmatu bhavanyo vyakto vyaktat sanatana yasa sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu navinashyati. Beyond this material world, where everything is temporary, asat, there is the spiritual world. Everything in this world is ultimately destroyed, including the material world itself. But the spiritual world is ever existing. So, as a genuine sadhu, Srila Prabhupada taught us to look to that spiritual world, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam. Sada pashanti surya divya chakshuratam yajiva vipanyava vishnu yat paramam padam. To look to the spiritual world, look up to the lotus feet of Vishnu in the spiritual world. He kindly taught us to do that, and only he asked in return for this great gift that he gave us to what this knowledge that we have received, to try to communicate that to others. So out of gratefulness to him, and as my duty, I must simply advise anyone who is willing to listen. Do not be enchanted by this material world. Take the guidance of actual sadhus. Understand who a real sadhu is. And take their direction to become free from material existence and go to the spiritual world with Krishna. And to the sadhus, we say, well, be a sadhu. And to everyone in general, know who is a sadhu. One should know what is the characteristic of a sadhu. In Kali Yuga, everything's mixed up. Everything's very, very strange in the modern age. But then what a hope is there in this Kali Yuga? The sadhus have to give guidance. So let them be sadhus. And let the businessmen be businessmen, the politicians be politicians, and entertainers be entertainers, and welfare workers be welfare workers. There are all kinds of people in the world. The sadhus are required to tell people about their highest duty in life. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Anything there? No. Okay. Hare Krishna. Question?
In Tirupati,
in
the ISKCON temple, near the ISKCON temple, there is a school.
There is a school.
Which is run by ISKCON devotees.
Yeah, yeah, okay, all right. Well, I can guess what the question is. I was talking on principles.
Now, Tattva-ridhiya
principles. This International Society for Krishna Consciousness is supposed to follow the principles given by Srila Prabhupada, which means the principles given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he's totally on principle. If it's not practically followed in ISKCON, that's another question. We should apply the principle, see the principle. It's not simply by putting a sign ISKCON that everything is perfect and pure. We have to, just by dressing in orange cloth, someone doesn't become a sadhu. So simply by putting a sign sadhu, ISKCON, it doesn't mean that it's actually properly following Srila Prabhupada. But that's another whole question altogether. Very big question. So, you didn't get as far as asking the question, but I gave a general answer to it. Yeah, some other question. Okay, you ask a question in the meantime. Go ahead. I'm just thinking of Bengal. In Bengali, we always used to get this. Oneke bole. Many people say. Many people say. And I would stop the question right at that point. And I would say, it doesn't matter what many people say. We have to follow what Krishna says. And I was just listening to a conversation with Srila Prabhupada. And one man is in Hyderabad, and Srila Prabhupada was saying that Krishna says this, and the man said, well, so-and-so Swami says this, and the other Swami says, they all disagree, and Prabhupada said, I don't care what any of them say, it doesn't matter what any of them say, we have to take what Krishna says. He said, no, but all the other sadhus, they're saying this, and Prabhupada said, no, we have to take what Krishna says. That's all. So that was the point Prabhupada's made. He said, you can probably say, you bring thousands of people and they all say this, this, that. We have to say what Krishna says. That's all. That's what makes Srila Prabhupada so bona fide. Simply takes what Krishna says. There may be thousands and millions of people saying other things. So?
The point is that some of the sannyasis in ISKCON, they do repeat knowledge, but then on the other hand, they also...
Yeah, they have a double life. They have also Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Schools on this and that. It makes it difficult for people then...
But that's what I'm saying. I'm just talking about someone, he may be a good sadhu, in his, but he's well known not for being a good sadhu, but for promoting toothpaste and so many other goods. So people know him for that. Or someone may be a good sadhu, but he's... I think anyone who's up with current affairs in India knows that the chief minister of, what should we say, one of the major states, if not the main, of India, is a sadhu. But no doubt he's now so busy being the administering the state that he doesn't... Does he still have time for doing all his sadhana and bhajan and all this kind of thing? Can he think... Or even when he's doing it, is he thinking about God? So, it may be that a sadhu does one thing which is worthy of a sadhu and something else by which he becomes well known. It's not recommended in Shastra, which he's supposed to be teaching. And it becomes that he has to live according to the profile of a... Say for instance, someone is a sadhu, but he's also promoting, we have to feed all the children so they can go to school and then we'll build up the nation. And he has to say like that. Which is not what a sadhu should say. Someone may say that we have to send the children to school so they can build up the nation. But this building up the nation idea is exactly what Krishna, when he met the sadhus at Kurukshetra, this is long before the Kurukshetra war, at the time of the solar eclipse, he addressed the sadhus there. That, yasyatma buddhi kuna petri dhatu kesvadhi kaletra adishu bhoma ijadi hi. Yatirta buddhi salalena karhi jidjaneshva bhigneshu sa eva gokara. Krishna said that anyone who identifies with the body as being the self, who thinks of his wife, home, children, and place of birth as being glorious, who goes to a holy place simply to take a bath without taking instructions from you, Krishna said to the holy people, such a person is no more intelligent than an animal. So, a sadhu is, Krishna is praising these sadhus because they taught people not to be attached to the body, not to be attached to the family, not to be attached to the country. But then if the sadhu, because he's promoting some charity to collect money, to feed children, then he has to say what's required. Yes, we're developing the nation, we're building the nation. He's just saying the opposite of what a sadhu should say. So it becomes contradictory. So in one meeting, he goes to one meeting and says, ladies and gentlemen, donate to feed the children, build the country. Then he goes to another meeting, and in the next meeting he says, all this attachment to the body and to the country, it's all illusion. Huh? How can he give one message in one place and another message in another place? Then he becomes not sadhu. Sadhu should be the same. His message is the same everywhere. Of course, It may be presented differently according to time, place, and circumstance, but it has to be the same message. And that's another reason why we can place great faith in Srila Prabhupada. We have recordings of his from since 1966 through to 1977. And he spoke the same message. It didn't vary. It may have been more simple or more complex. Actually, it was never very complex. He always presented very simply. He may have been speaking to a few disciples or a few non-disciples, or guests who came to visit him, or to people at a public program. But it was the same message. He didn't change his message. The same message that everyone needs to hear consistently. We should take the example from the great sadhus. If we're to be sadhus, then we should sadhu margana gamanam. Rupa Goswami tells us one of the principles of devotional service. Rupa Goswami tells us, taking instruction from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is to follow the path of the sadhu. So there's a question there? Okay. Hare Krishna.